Investor intelligence provides general information only. You should consider seeking independent advice to see how this information relates to your unique circumstances. Please refer to the terms and conditions available at investorintelligence.com.au for more.
Welcome to this week's episode of Investor Intelligence, your weekly podcast on all things investment, hosted by me, Jacob Kearns. Often when I talk about investing to people, everyone seems to want to go out and buy their first home before they look at investing. And for some people, this might be the right option, but for others, this could be the wrong way to go about things. This week, I'm joined by Member Experience Director at the Property Mentors, Aaron Best. Hi, Aaron.
Thank you for having me back.
So if someone was tossing up between buying their first home or investing in property, what are some things they should be aware of?
Well, buying your first property is a big deal, whether you're buying a place for you to live or whether you're buying an investment property. It's no surprise that purchasing property is actually one of the longest paths to purchase of any industry. So car buying and those sorts of things. Purchasing property is the longest. It actually comes in at just under 20 months. So under 2 years, people are in the consideration phase or are looking to purchase property. A few years ago, Google published their insights into the purchase path for property, and they broke it down into three key stages. So your first stage is dreaming. You're thinking about property. You might become a little bit more interested in property news, but you're not actively out there doing anything about it. You're kind of just, oh yes, I like the idea of buying property.
So is this for investments as well as homes?
Yeah, that's for any property purchase or any home loan scenario. And this dreaming phase actually lasts almost about 11 months. So more than half the time is spent thinking about possibly wanting to buy property.
Yeah.
The next phase is going into research. So that's when you start to actively go and look at home loan products. You start to follow what's happening in the market. You might start searching online for things, but you're not actively going and saying, okay, I'm going to go buy this one, or I'm going to go to this auction or anything like that. That research phase may last a little over 5 months on average. And then the last phase is actually being in the market. So the last phase is going ahead and looking at actual properties that you would purchase. You've already got your ducks in a row, and you start contacting agents and start to actively want to purchase a property.
Right. So I assume a lot of people would start developing a saving plan if they haven't already around the first stage.
You might start to change some of your behaviors during that dreaming phase. So if you're sitting there going, okay, I possibly want to buy a property in the next 2 years, you might start to think about, okay, I'm going to start saving some money and making sure I've got a deposit ready. And you might start to make those small changes to your behaviors. Even if you're not consciously aware of them, you might start to think, oh, no, I need to save money, so I'm not going to go out this weekend. But because you're not actively in the market, you're not necessarily going full pelt towards this savings target.
Right.
So it's quite a long process. It's a big decision. One of the biggest things that people have to consider in that is their finances. And that comes in at around that research phase where you are speaking to mortgage brokers, you're looking at what kind of property you want to purchase, and whether you're buying a principal place of residence, a place that you want to live, or whether you're buying an investment property, getting your finances in order is obviously really important.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you're buying a PPR, when you're buying that place for you to live, you're putting a roof over your head and you're getting a home loan. You then also have to consider things like rates and everything else that you wouldn't have had to pay if you were renting. If you're buying an investment property, even though you do still have a lot of those expenses, you still have a home loan, you still have rates and insurance and those kinds of things, you're now also making income.
Mm.
So an investment property, unlike a place that you live, can make you money as much as it costs you money.
And as opposed to your principal place of residence, a lot of what you're paying, interest rates, depreciation, are tax deductible as well, right?
Yeah, you can deduct a lot of those things from your tax.
Yeah.
The other thing that is probably one of the biggest consideration for first home buyers is the government incentives that come along with purchasing your first home. There are two main incentives. One is stamp duty concessions for first home buyers, and another is first homeowners grants. Both of them have rules that you have to abide by to get them, but they're available to first home buyers.
So in regards to the first home buyer's grant, first of all, what is it?
So the first homeowner's grant is a dollar incentive that you get as a first home buyer. Depending on the state that you live in, it may be slightly different. Depending on the government at the time, it may be slightly different. As an example, in Victoria here, it's $10,000 that's put towards your property. The Victorian government also do a stamp duty concession. So if your property is less than a certain amount when you purchase it, you don't pay any stamp duty. They offer both of those as incentives for people to get into the property market.
And stamp duty is 5% of the total value of the property?
Stamp duty is a sliding scale depending on the state that you're in and depending on the value of your property. In most circumstances, it is a percentage of a certain portion of your property value plus a set amount. Each state has a different stamp duty algorithm that they use. As an example, a $500,000 property in Victoria, your stamp duty probably does come in at around that $25,000.
Right. So when you're looking at buying an investment compared to your residence, are you able to get the first home buyer's grant for an investment?
Short answer, no. Long answer, it depends on if you can meet the requirements that the government set.
Right.
So the most common requirement that the government has for these first homeowner concessions is that you have to live in the property for a set period of time after you purchase it. One of the most common is you have to live in the property for 6 continuous months. Within 12 months of buying the property. If you meet that requirement and then decide to rent it out, so if you live in it for the first 6 months, then you decide to leave and rent it out, you still qualify for your grant. As long as you meet the requirements, you're fine. But if you were to buy a property and not live in it, then no, you won't qualify for the first homeowner's grants. And living in a property that you purchase isn't always possible. If you were purchasing it for a long-term goal of it being an investment, living in it may not be possible. You may not have bought the property in an area that you actually live in. It may not be a property that suits your lifestyle. There are many different factors to take into consideration there that might mean that you can't live in that property. And if that's the case, then no, you don't qualify for those first homeowner grants or stamp duty concessions.
Okay, so why would someone opt to give up the first home buyer's grant and choose to invest when they are essentially foregoing that $10,000?
So as I briefly touched on before, when you're purchasing an investment property, many of your expenses become tax deductible. This isn't possible on a property that you live in. For an example, with an investment property, the interest on your home loan is something you can claim off your income tax. With a house that you live in, you can't do that.
Yeah.
When you take all of this into account, you could be saving quite a lot of money in tax each year. And over the short, medium to long term, you could offset the loss of the first homeowner's grant with more ongoing benefits.
Yeah. And just to clarify, you can't go out and invest in property. And then when you go to buy a home, you're not eligible for that first home buyer's grant, are you?
Yes. If your name has been on a title, you lose the ability to qualify for your first homeowner's grant.
Yeah, so it's one or the other unless you choose to live in it for 6 months.
Yeah, and that 6 months can vary depending on the government that gave you the grant as well.
Right.
So it might be that they require you to live there for 12 months or whatever it may be. It just depends on the government at the time, the grant that you applied for, all those kinds of things. And when you do take all that into consideration, it can offset quite quickly. So if, for example, we take a look at a $500,000 property in Victoria, if you're a first home buyer, you would get that $10,000 first homeowner's grant and you would get the stamp duty concession of about $25,000 saved. So as a first home buyer, you're getting $35,000 worth of incentives there.
Yeah.
If you were to rent out that same property, let's say you rented it out for $485 a week, which in Victoria, not unreasonable for a $500,000 property, you would have lost the $35,000 that you got for being a first home buyer. But, and I ran these numbers through Augur, our investment tool, if you were earning the average Australian wage, you would be saving almost $10,000 in tax every year. That's not just in the first year or the second year, that's every year you save $10,000 in tax potentially. So what that means is over the medium term, not even the long term, over the medium term, over 3 to 5 years, that investment property is now looking to be more appealing because yes, you missed out on $35,000 worth of incentives at the very start, but each year you're making almost $10,000 in savings on tax.
Yeah. What about when you're buying your home to live in, you're paying the mortgage, which once you've paid that off, that's your asset. When you're renting, that's not going to you. That's going to the owner of the home that you're renting. So when you compare paying your mortgage to someone else's, how do you factor that in?
Realistically, yes, you would still have to have somewhere to live. So you go and you continue to rent. I've done an episode about that previously called Rent Vesting, where you live in a place that's more what you want to live in and you invest in an area that has better potential for growth and better opportunity for you to enter the property market. When it comes to these kinds of strategies where you are buying an investment property first rather than your PBR, the thing to consider is in both circumstances, you do end up with a mortgage, as you said. However, in one circumstance, in your investment property, your mortgage interest is a tax deduction, so you're making savings there. And your investment property is also making you income. A property that you live in doesn't make you any income. So right. It doesn't offset the expenses of having a home loan, whereas an investment property does offset its own expenses. It may be completely offset depending on how much rent you make in, or it may be offsetting a portion of it. What that looks like for future you is that your investment property can offset the hit taking out your home loan has had on your borrowing capacity. That means that you generally can be in a position to take out a second home loan and buy a second property sooner if you purchase an investment property than if you were to buy a PPR. So a PPR would lower your borrowing capacity because you've increased your expenses, but you haven't increased your income. Whereas an investment property, you've increased your expenses, but you've also increased your income. So your borrowing capacity doesn't take quite as big a hit. And what that means is you can be a couple of years earlier to purchasing your second property. Many of our members here at TPM are in a financial position to purchase their second investment within 2 years of buying their first, which for a lot of people who buy their PPR might sound really, really soon, because you generally have to recover from putting out the deposit and getting your borrowing capacity back up. So now, instead of buying a PPR, someone started to build a portfolio. They've bought their first property. They're ready to buy their second property in 2 years. That portfolio is helping them to build a bigger portfolio. You recently had Malika on the podcast talking about this leapfrog strategy to property growth and to portfolio growth. So let's say, if you were to follow this pathway, you get yourself to four properties over 6 years. So that's buying a new property every 2 years. You buy one at year zero, one at year two, one at year four, and one at year six. And now you've got four properties in 6 years. At this point, you will have a great property portfolio, and then you can start to consider your PPR. So you're only 6 years later than what you had originally wanted.
Okay. And is that realistic for most people? Do you have to have a really high income to be able to buy a property every 2 years?
We've had members at the Property Mentors who are on average incomes, some on less than average incomes. It all comes down to having the property, making money because it is rented out, and making sure that you are also sticking to your own budgets and your own strategies. So it's not unrealistic to go for a property every 2 years. If you follow a structured idea and you follow a structured goal and you have that in place, it's not unreasonable to go every couple of years you could buy a property. Whereas if you were to buy your first home, you probably are on a little bit more of a back foot because you're now having to make more money to increase your borrowing capacity again. The other added benefit of that is that in this 6 year future time, you've now got four properties under your belt. All four of those properties are starting to grow in value, and you're able to draw on that value to purchase another property. And let's say the fifth property is going to be the one you want to live in. So you're now looking at a property that you want to buy. 6 years ago, you had your deposit, you didn't have really anything else, and you were trying to buy a $500,000 property to live in. Now you've got four properties under your belt. You've got a lot more knowledge of the property industry. Your lifestyle is probably a lot different, but you've now got probably a bit more borrowing power. You've got a bit more spending power to utilize, and you probably can find a nicer first home than the one you were looking for when you first started. So delaying that PPR purchase by just a few years can help set you up for a more ideal scenario for yourself, but also a more long-term view for your financial position, because you will have started a property portfolio.
Yeah. So to summarize, yes, if you go down the road of buying your home to live in, you get grants and subsidies, which is great. But if you choose to invest first, you're getting tax deductions from the interest rate, you're getting potentially more capital growth, and you're also increasing your borrowing capacity. So who would this strategy be suitable for?
This idea is about sacrificing now to benefit later. That's the crux of it. Instead of buying a house that you want to live in now, you're buying an investment property that at the end of the day, you won't get to use. Someone else will live in it and you'll continue to rent. It is something that really contradicts the traditional Great Australian Dream.
Yeah.
The Great Australian Dream is a measure of success that is ingrained in so many of us when we're young that you live in a house that you own. I know that was ingrained in me when I was growing up. My parents owned their own home, and because they did buy a principal place of residence first and then we continued to grow and we kept having to build bigger houses, they didn't get to start an investment portfolio until later in life once they were empty nesters. When I first moved out of home, I rented for a year and then I'm like, no, I want to buy a house that I live in because that's what's been taught to me my entire life. And my first purchase, the house that I lived in, wasn't an ideal purchase. I bought a house that was bigger than I needed. I spent more than I probably needed to. It was in an area that limited my lifestyle. It wasn't a successful purchase, but I still did it because that was the Great Australian Dream. That's what I was taught.
Yeah.
At the time, I didn't really have the emotional readiness to understand that I could continue renting and I could own an investment property and not feel like that was a failure. This is a solid long-term concept to be able to set yourself up for the future with a property portfolio before you start buying the shiny things that you want, getting your ducks in a row before you buy that house for yourself. And it also has the added benefit that when you do eventually go to buy that shiny thing, that thing for you, the house that you want to live in, you're probably going to be in a financial position to buy something you like better than what you were going to get when you scraped towards buying your first property. And I've seen a number of cases where people have decided that, no, I'm going to buy the house I want to live in, but I really want to live in this area that is quite expensive because that's where all my friends are. And so they buy an apartment somewhere that they probably really shouldn't because they couldn't afford it. And then they're burdened with a mortgage that they can't afford to pay because they didn't want to sacrifice lifestyle for property purchase. And that's where something like rentvesting really has a much better appeal, is that you don't have to sacrifice your lifestyle to be able to afford a property that would be more suitable for someone who isn't you.
Right. So it sounds like if you do want to build a property portfolio in the future, then this is quite a good strategy. And also the added benefit is you get to grow a portfolio and have the lifestyle that you want.
Yeah. And eventually you will be able to afford to buy a property in the city if that's where you want to live. But in 3, 5, 6 years time, it might be that your lifestyle's changed, particularly if, for example, you're a young couple, you might have kids or a wedding or something like that that you want to plan for. So that's an expense that you need to consider. Or you may decide, okay, as a young couple, we really want to live in a 2-bedroom apartment in the CBD. As you get older, you're like, okay, now we've got a kid or 2 kids or 3 kids. Now you're like, okay, well, we definitely need to buy a house. And so you start to move further out. And so your lifestyle changes. So that PPR purchase is not as long-term as an investment property purchase, where because you're not living in it, as long as it continues to make money, as long as it continues to be a sound investment, you'll keep it for 10, 20, 30 years. And it's going to make you money that entire time.
So who might this strategy not be suitable for?
Realistically, as I mentioned, the emotional readiness of a buyer is probably the biggest thing to consider when it comes to this kind of concept. This is about sacrificing now to benefit later. And for many people, that's not something they want to do. For others, it could be overcoming that cultural, societal expectation that to be successful, you should live in a house that you own. A lot of people feel that successful people don't rent, and that's not true. Successful people can definitely rent. They might have a property portfolio and might be reinvesting. You could be reinvesting and own 4 properties. If you're not careful about keeping a long-term view on your goals, if you're quick to make those kind of knee-jerk reactions to reach for that reward of owning your own home sooner than your original plan, you're probably going to fall off this wagon. This strategy is going to be hard for you to stick to. But although the longer that you hold to this concept, the longer that you continue to build your property portfolio before you pull the trigger on buying a PPR, the more success you could probably have in that property portfolio. It definitely isn't something that people who are so ingrained in the concept of I need to buy a house to live in to be successful, if people can't overcome that objection, this isn't a strategy for them because they won't feel the satisfaction of that portfolio because they don't own a house they live in.
Yeah.
But if you can overcome that emotional connection to that Great Australian Dream, then this has the potential to be really valuable to you.
Yeah. And what are the risks associated with this strategy? Obviously, you're paying rent and you're also paying the loan on your investment property. What if something goes wrong?
Like any investment, things can go wrong. No investment is completely risk-free. And if you're ever promised a completely risk-free investment...
Run.
At the end of the day, even if you're buying a PPR, that can still have risks. The thing is, you're getting yourself into a home loan, 20, 25, 30-year home loan. You're committing yourself to that. Interest rates can change. The rental market may change. All these things can impact owning a property, whether you live in it or whether it's investment. The important thing is to mitigate your risks. So have a plan in place. Have a long-term vision in place. Think about, okay, well, what happens if in 2 years' time something does happen and I get an illness or something that stops me working? Do I have my insurances in place? What happens if I decide to have a child? What do I have to consider when the child is born and then when they go to school and childcare and all those kinds of things? Factor that into your long-term goal, understanding that everything has a risk in life, but thinking about your long-term strategy can help to make sure that you can weather those things.
Yeah. So as always, it sort of comes back to your strategy, what you're trying to achieve, making sure you're talking to the right mentors and making sure you're in the right headspace to invest and you're able to stick to your goals.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
It definitely wasn't something that I considered before starting to work here. And I think that's where society's expectations and norms come in. Everybody has that assumption that buying your home, paying your own mortgage is always the right choice because you can pay that off and then look at investing later. But it's important to know that that isn't the only option available and there might be better options out there if you are looking to build a portfolio. Well, thanks Aaron for coming on and thank you to everyone listening. I hope you got a lot out of this.
Thanks for having me, Jacob.
If you found this episode or any of our episodes helpful, please make sure to share and leave a rating to help us reach more people on their investing journeys. And of course, subscribe to be notified when new episodes drop. Make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at Investor Intelligence Podcast. You can find links to our other socials in the show notes, including a link to the Property Mentors weekly blog. If you are ready to get your property portfolio in shape for financial freedom, check out Luke's latest book, Property Fit. You can get yourself a copy at www.propertyfitbook.com.au.